Part 3, Technical Development. Polarimetry. Various measuring principles.
Alfred Werner received the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1913. He was honored for his work on the arrangements of inorganic complexes. Contrary to prevailing opinion at the time, which was based on the chain theory by Danish chemist Sophus Mads Jørgensen, Werner developed a new structural model by using metal complexes like cobalt salts. He proposed the geometry of an octahedron and located two isomers at its vertices. His assumption, which was initially purely theoretical, was then successfully verified by means of a Schmidt and Hensch circle polarimeter in the labs of the ETH Zurich, the so-called catacombs. Even though it was a controversial issue in the beginning, this theory established a three-dimensional structural model as a basis for different spatial arrangements of organic and inorganic substances in relation to a central carbon molecule. To this day, this model has been crucial to the applications of polarimetry. Polarimetry is based on measuring the rotation of linearly polarized light passing through an optically active substance. Optically active are all nonlinear organic and inorganic substances which can rotate polarized light. Here, a law applies which was already described by the French physicist Jean-Baptiste Biot in 1815. The dependencies stated in Biot's law need to be taken into consideration when designing precise polarimeters, such as those still built by Schmidt and Hensch today. Schmidt and Hensch has different methods at its disposal with which the optical rotation can be determined up to an absolute angular degree value of 10 to the power of minus 5. Evidence of this rich tradition in dealing with very diverse optical instruments can be found in the well-documented discussions with Ferdinand F. Lippich. In close collaboration with Schmidt and Hensch, Lippich presented different suggestions on how to optimize and arrange polarizing prisms and oculars. He thereby determined the half-shade principle as a basis for measuring procedures of the future. Even today, the extinction principle of two polarizers at a 90-degree angle is used to determine the optical rotation of liquids. In this context, it is worth mentioning a special method which makes use of a quartz wedge compensator. Schmidt and Hensch developed the world's first quartz wedge polarimeter as early as 1863. A close relationship with the chemist Karl Wenzke of the Schicklersche Zuckerfabrik laid the foundation for effective sucrose measurement technology, which is still being used today. It established the connection between the optical rotation of quartz and that of sucrose, and was used to measure the sucrose content in sugar beet from then on. Until today, the same optical principles are employed in the modern automatic quartz wedge polarimeter, the Schmidt and Hensch Saccharomat. The concentration of sucrose in the dissolved cell juice of both sugarcane and sugar beet is determined on the basis of polarization. This method does not only ensure a reliable way of paying the sugar beet or sugarcane growers, it is also a very robust process which can be applied both in the subtropical regions of sugarcane cultivation as well as in sugar beet regions of moderate climate. Another advantage of this method lies in its simplicity. Measurements can be done automatically and reach a high throughput. During the sugar harvest, up to 60 samples must be measured per minute, 24 hours a day, 7 days of the week. Furthermore, the system is insensitive to temperature-related wavelength alterations because the optical rotatory dispersion of sucrose and quartz are very similar. According to the aforementioned Biot law, optical rotation depends on the wavelength and decreases in relation to longer wavelengths. In a precise circle polarimeter, the wavelength used must be known with an accuracy of 0.03 nanometer so that the rotation can be determined to a 3 to 1000 angular degree. This precision is necessary for polarimeters in use today. As quartz and sucrose show parallels in their wavelength-dependent rotations, a broader spectrum may be used for the quartz compensator method, and therefore more light too, an important advantage when using the machine in a technically demanding context. Schmidt and Hensch enjoy a particularly good reputation in the domain of sugar analysis. A great variety of optical instruments, not only polarimeters, but also colorimeters and spectroscopes, can already be found in those former colonies which first cultivated sugarcane. The large-scale cultivation of sugar beet in Europe only began in the 19th century, when prices increased steadily due to rising demand for the product obtained from sugarcane. Competition is still fierce in sucrose production processes from sugar beet and sugarcane.
Sample preparation.
By the end of the 1980s, Schmidt and Hensch were commissioned by the Australian Sugar Institute to develop a long-wavelength sugar polarimeter. As optical activity in the long-wave spectrum is only a third of the rotation compared to that at 589 nanometers, a polarimeter had to be developed with an internal resolution three times as high, meaning 3 × 10⁻³ instead of 5 × 10⁻³ as before. From a metrological point of view, this method might seem unreasonable, but it had the following background. For the preparation of sugar samples, precipitation of non-sugars is necessary so as to obtain a transparent solution for the polarimeter measurement. Precipitation had so far been conducted with the help of lead acetates, which were increasingly falling into disrepute because of their detrimental effects on the environment. Schmidt and Hensch subsequently became very committed to introducing a method which needed no clarification. With the help of infrared polarimetry, many sugarcane countries can now entirely forego a clarification of sugar solutions, be it in the receiving labs or the factory laboratories. The measurement results remain accurate and very precise. Moreover, devices for pressure filtration have been developed, which make it possible for users to produce clear yet highly absorbing samples for reliable measurements. Schmidt and Hensch have developed another exciting business segment in close collaboration with the sugar industry, most notably with the French group Saint Louis Sucre. Schmidt and Hensch is the first company which has succeeded in measuring the purity of supersaturated solutions in the fabrication process, both in an automatic way as well as continuously with high reliability. Additional processes of technically sophisticated automations are part of Schmidt and Hensch's portfolio as well.
Polarimetry in pharmaceutics.
Ever since the genetic damages caused by thalidomide, marketed in Germany as Contigan, spatial structure determination has become a sine qua non in pharmaceutical development, particularly with regard to the control of active ingredients. In those days, the effects of enantiomers, the right or left rotation of the agent, and their metabolism in the human organism were not sufficiently known yet. Today, pharmaceutical effects are perceived not so much from a purely biochemical point of view, but rather in consideration of spatial orientation. Mechanisms are examined by using the key lock principle, and this explains the increasing use of polarimetry and similar procedures in pharmaceutics. A current trend here is personalized medicine, which deals with the individual spatial implementation of an agent in the metabolism of a human organism. In this context, it becomes increasingly important to control the temperature and its influence on the optical rotation. Already in the 19th century, there had been studies on the correlation between a solution's temperature and therein dissolved isomers, different configurations of carbohydrates. In his experiments, Alfred Werner had already used double coating for measuring tubes, which allowed him to adjust the temperature during measurement. And as early as 1913 and 1916, devices were built to monitor the inversion of sugars at higher temperatures, a subject still relevant in sugar production today. Over the years, polarimeters by Schmidt and Hensch have gained an important position within the pharmaceutical industry. With a direct connection between angular detection and analyzer, Schmidt and Hensch can ensure exceptional precision and linearity across the whole measuring range. This also explains why the instruments are favored for sensitive measurements. The world's biggest generics producer, for example, uses only polarimeters of the Unipol L series for its best-selling product, a drug for patients with multiple sclerosis. They are used to control raw materials as well as the quality of the final product. The specific optical rotation of the samples is measured while consistently monitoring and regulating the temperature to keep it constant. Apart from thermostats, so-called Peltier tubes are also being used today, depending on the area of application. They keep the sample temperature at a constant 0.01 degrees Celsius.
Interferometry and refractometry. Two related measurement principles.
Already at the beginning of the 19th century, interferometry was a popular method to measure the density of materials. In 1856, the French Eleuthère A. Nicolas Mascart and Jules C. Jamin had already realized different optical setups which were used to determine the refractive index of gases in relation to vacuum. The differences in the refractive indices lead to a shift of the interference fringes and can be observed visually through an eyepiece. Back then, it was believed that light expands in waves with constant speed in a carrier medium, the so-called ether. Albert Abraham Michelson was particularly interested in finding out more about this ether and tried to measure it with the help of his now famous interferometric setup. As previously mentioned, this first Michelson interferometer was built by Schmidt and Hensch. In an interferometer, the phase shift is caused by a deceleration of the speed of light when it passes through a second measuring chamber, filled with a denser medium compared to a reference chamber. The same applies to a refractometer. With the described setup, Michelson wanted to measure the relative movement of the ether to the movement of the Earth. The Michelson interferometer was an extremely sensitive setup, which consisted of two arms made out of brass, each of them 1 meter long. This setup was extremely sensitive to vibration and caused the interference fringes to disappear by stamping on the ground in 100 meters distance. Michelson called his setup interferential refractor, which points to the close relation between interferometry and refractometry.
Working principle of a Michelson interferometer.
The idea was that if there was relative movement of the ether, the turning of the interferometer arms would cause a shift of the interference fringes. However, to anticipate the result, this did not happen in the predicted way. So this experiment was a big failure, but retrospectively proved to be one of the most important experiments in physics. Shortly afterwards, in 1905, Albert Einstein published his special relativity theory, in which the movement of mass in the related space-time is described. The Michelson interferometer setup remains one of the most precise methods of measuring differences in speed or length. On a greatly enlarged scale, it is thought to be used to detect gravitational waves. In some ways, this research project, which is now in a planning phase, can be considered a resumption of Michelson's question. In both measurement principles, in refractometry as well as in interferometry, the dependencies of pressure and temperature have to be taken into account. Hermann Helmholtz, Michelson's mentor in Germany, had already pointed out the problem of temperature variation to him. Based on the wave propagation theory of light and based on the fundamentals of technical optics, The developers, owners, and engineers at Schmidt & Hensch made significant contributions to this development, which can be reconstructed on the basis of numerous publications of this time. No one else than Alexander Graham Bell funded the Michelson interferometer, with trust resources Bell had won. Incidentally, Bell was related to Schmidt and Hensch beforehand by commissioning the company with the production of optical testing instruments as well as the optimization of microphones. In this context, it is interesting that Bell initially worked on a photophone. This device first transduced sound into modulated light using a thin mirror. At the further end, the modulated light signal was converted back into an accordingly modulated current with a second mirror, which was connected to a selenium cell. Herewith, a small membrane was driven, which produced an acoustic signal. Bell's idea of the photophone may well be seen as a prototype for today's optical signal transmission in telecommunications. Alexander Graham Bell also had microphones built by Schmidt and Hensch for the electrical-driven telephones. The conversion of sonic vibration into an electric current had just been discovered and was to be marketed as a house telephone. The corresponding offer from Bell to produce these telephones was rejected by Hermann Hensch. The devices should initially be used to connect the different floors of houses typically built in Berlin during the period of promoterism. Back then, it was not believed that this could become a successful product. An anecdote has been passed on in the family that Hermann Hensch had social reasons for refusing to support this new technology, with the remark,
"Women already talk enough anyway. Why should we support that further with this new technology?"
The offer of Bell was turned down. Shortly afterwards, the first telephone connection was put into operation between Berlin and Leipzig.
Refractometry.
In a vacuum, light moves with 299,792 kilometers per second. In water, the speed of light reduces to circa 225,000 kilometers per second. In optical mediums like sapphire, it propagates only at about 170,000 kilometers per second. When a beam of light enters diagonally into a denser medium, the optical ray will change its direction towards the optical axis of the denser medium. This relation is described in the so-called Snellius law, named after Willebrod Snell van Rogen, also named Snellius. The basics of refractometry were developed by Ernst Abbe and Karl Pulfrich in 1869. Refractometer operating on the Pulfrich principle and in accordance to Abbe were built by Schmidt and Hensch already in the 19th century. The Abbe refractometer is used as a visual instrument for measuring the refractive index until today. In the design according to Abbe, the wavelength dependency of the refractive index is taken into account by using the so-called Amici double prism. The dispersion of light, which means splitting it up into its different frequencies, could thereby be adjusted to the standard wavelength of 589 nanometers. By tilting a mirror, which is linked to a graduation, the so-called dark and bright borderline can be detected with a resolution of refractive index 10 to the power of minus 4. In the so-called immersion refractometer by Carl Zeiss, which used a variety of prisms, a small range of the refractive index measured with a solution of 10 high minus 5 could be determined. Schmidt and Hensch built the first electronic refractometers in the 1980s. They were based on a mechanically moving slit which produced different angles of inclination of the incoming light beam. Then the position with the maximum light and the respective slit position were detected. An important precondition for this principle was the constant rotatory movement of the slit. After that, a mechanically less sensitive procedure was developed, which worked with a linear encoder. Equipped with a photodiode, the linear encoder scanned the dark and bright borderline of the reflected light. This instrument could detect the large range of water from refractive index 1.33284 water up to 1.72000 with a resolution of 5×10⁻⁵. Today, refractometer usually use so-called CCD xylon charged coupled devices, which can detect the dark and bright borderline with sufficient accuracy. Today, Schmidt and Hensch reach an accuracy of up to 3×10⁻⁶, providing the surrounding conditions are met.
Working principle of a refractometer.
The refractive index is a non-dimensional number and often has little meaning to many users. The respective substances need to be converted into mass percent on the basis of conversion tables. The close relation of the sample temperature and its influence on the refractive index needs to be monitored especially. A temperature variation of 0.1 degrees Celsius already results in a deviation of the result of refractive index 1×10⁻⁵. This dependency can be explained by the faster penetration of the photons through the mediums due to larger lattice distance. In this way, the photons, or the wavefront, loses less energy to the mediums they pass through. This dependency is usually non-linear. In addition, it is necessary to control and use another variable, dispersion. The refraction depends on the wavelength of the emitted light. In the mentioned Abbe refractometer, the mean dispersion was set to the sodium emission line of 589 nanometers. The Abbe number uses the values of three wavelengths and their respective refractive indices. The Abbe number is also used to characterize different types of glass and gemstones. Until now, it is a fundamental method for determining the refractive index for glass in the melt. In the 1990s, Schmidt and Hensch has developed a refractometer, which can measure the dispersion and the relation to the refractive index in the range of 400 to 900 nanometers, which was patented. Here, seven discrete wavelengths are focused on a single measuring point without the use of mechanical parts. The refractive indices can now be measured sequentially and can be displayed as a refractive index dispersion curve. This development was initially started on our own accord, without a market pull. Today, this procedure of the determination of the refractive index in relation to the dispersion is a widely used method to characterize polymers and solids, but also intraocular lenses. Further applications are due. At the same time, the DSR Lambda offers a very precise temperature control in the region of 10 to 30 degrees Celsius. A temperature precision of 0.01 degrees Celsius can be achieved. Another aspect of this development is the determination of reference numbers at different wavelengths, for which there are no data yet. Here, Schmidt and Hensch are doing basic research in the measurement of liquids for calibration, including their temperature and dispersion values. Without this basic work, the calibration of this so-called dispersion refractometer is impossible.
Inline process refractometry.
By means of the inline process refractometry, which was added to the product range of Schmidt and Hensch in the mid-1980s, the determination of the concentrations of liquids can be monitored directly during the production process. Due to the principle, only one variable of a mixture can be measured here, but otherwise, this measurement is very straightforward and precise up to 1,000%. By using the right position in the production flow, also multi-component mixtures can be precisely monitored. The instrument simply has to be placed where the additive is arriving.
Concentration of cutting oils and lubricants.
Cutting oils and lubricants are mainly used in the electronic, mechanic, and optical industries. The main function of these emulsions is to ensure the right cooling and lubrication of tools and workpieces during processing. In regards to the achievable precision of today's metal cutting, a precise control of this emulsion is of great importance. Furthermore, machine idle time can be prolonged with an according reduction of costs. The process refractometer IPRC2 produced by Schmidt and Hensch has been developed particularly for this application. The device can be used in both tanks and pipe connections. A continuous output of the concentration of the lubricant and their temperature can be transmitted.
Semiconductor application, IPR.
High-tech productions, like in the wafer production of the semiconductor industry, are operating in a highly controlled and sensitive area. Etching and cleaning solutions need to be mixed and monitored continuously and with high precision, and need to be monitored during further application. Also, highly aggressive and corrosive substances need to be prepared freshly. Traditionally, these mixtures are prepared by using complex online titrators with costly maintenance. The inline refractometer, IPR, is eminently suitable for the control of mixing processes and their regulation in real time. Contrary to other methods of surveillance, the concentration of liquids is directly recorded, so that the dosage can be regulated. This method also provides an ecological advantage because it can do without additional reagent chemicals, which are necessary in titration. Meanwhile, more and more semiconductor manufacturers become aware of this method and are now using this new method of dosage. For this application, a special inline housing made from HDPE or Teflon attachment for the compact IPRC2 was developed.
De-alcoholization of beer using membrane separation.
De-alcoholization of beer is either achieved by special brewing methods, where ethanol is not developing via distillation, or by membrane separation techniques. The membrane technology, which can be used for practically any beer type, provides several advantages, like low energy consumption, simple cleaning, and avoidance of thermal stress of the beer flavorings. Above all, it preserves those flavorings which are distinctive of the beer. The pilot plant for the de-alcoholization of beer, which was developed in collaboration with the School of Life Sciences in northwestern Switzerland, is particularly characterized by a compact construction and easy operation. It is capable of de-alcoholizing up to 50 hectoliters of beer per day. Alcohol containing beer is pumped through a cross-filtration unit on a mobile setup. The permeate, which only contains alcohol and water, is monitored using a refractometer, IPRC2. The process is continued till the alcohol content gets below the legal values. An additional value of this measurement is that you can immediately detect a possible breakthrough of the membrane. This method, which has been developed at the School of Life Sciences solely for the analysis of de-alcoholized beer, used gas chromatographs for measuring the alcohol content of beer and validated herewith the measured values of the process refractometer. In order to determine the throughput of the setup, the de-alcoholization experiments were run with conventional beer. These experiments showed that it is possible to de-alcoholize beer gently. In order to determine the throughput of the setup, the de-alcoholization experiments were run with conventional beer. These experiments showed that it is possible to de-alcoholize beer gently. Because of the avoidance of thermal heating, most of the flavors are preserved, because the membrane mainly removes alcohol and water. At present, tests and analysis are being carried out using the combination of numerous different membrane separation techniques. The aim is to find out how the beer flavor can be further improved without having to use additives.
Spectroscopy and photometry.
Photometry and spectroscopy were another important area of operation for Schmidt and Hensch. Here, two numerous tasks and applications are deployed to this day. A historic example is the spectroscope, according to Lummer and Kunast, which was built by Schmidt and Hensch in 1903. A spectrometer was combined with a polarimeter, and the optical rotation was determined at different wavelengths. Today, the Polartronic V is the corresponding measuring device in the product range of Schmidt and Hensch. In the 19th century, Schmidt and Hensch produced and offered spectroscopes in many varieties. As an example, the spectrometer, according to Kirchhoff Bunsen, and the particularly elaborate construction, according to Victor von Lange, are described hereafter. In connection with Robert Wilhelm Bunsen, after whom the well-known Bunsen burner was named, it is interesting to mention the original generation of monochromatic or single-colored light. Electrically generated light was not yet used as it is today, not to mention the creation of a defined wavelength, interference, or edge filter. However, the gas-powered Bunsen burner already existed, preferably pure salts like sodium, potassium, and also mercury were burnt in the Bunsen burner and emitted their typical wavelengths. Thereby, it was possible to produce the so-called standard wavelength with high precision. In the form of spectral light sources, they still play an important role today because they very stably emit only one discrete wavelength. The sodium line, which still often appears today as a reference source, has its origins in this initial form of discrete wavelength. For lack of electric light, the heliostat also was part of the standard equipment of optical instruments. Here, sunlight was caught with a mirror, and the changing position of the incident sunlight was compensated by a gear coupled to a clock. Today, systems like these can be found in room illumination, but also in solar collectors.
Photometry.
In photometry, various areas need to be differentiated. We want to mention the determination of the absorption or transmission with a specific wavelength passing through a sample. This method is still used at Schmidt and Hensch today. Another method needs to be mentioned, the determination of color reflected from a surface. Schmidt and Hensch provide the saccharoflex for the determination of the degree of whiteness of sugar crystals. This is remarkable because tariffs and imports into the USA were not only regulated in the 19th century. The quality criteria of sugar still are defined in the EU sugar market standards, using a point system which includes a degree of whiteness of the sugar crystals. In these quality regulations, many different things are determined, including the sucrose content, the degree of invert sugar, the ash content, which refers to the conductivity value of dissolved salts, and the liquid color, absorption, in the solution. Schmidt and Hensch can measure all these parameters at line. Constantly, processes and methods to determine the possibilities of decomposing light to its spectral components were improved. On the other hand, methods were developed which composed different colors using spectrally separated light sources, for instance, the color mixing apparatus, according to Helmholtz-Koenig. With that device, color standards were developed in the beginning of the 20th century, which were used for the calibration and control of signal lights. Professor Manfred Richter, also known as the Holy Father of Colors, needs to be mentioned here, with whom the author of this text had the honor of working together in the national standardization of colors. The author will never forget the very calm and wise way in which Richter pointed out that the young members in the Standards Committee for Color of the DIN would need a little bit longer to understand the complexity of color measurement and color mixing. Young members did not only refer to the author, who was in his mid-30s at that time, but also to various other colleagues who bet on the spectral separation of light using interference filters. This should supersede the spectral mixing technique of the anomaloscope for the detection of the color deficiency of the human color perception, which was produced by Schmidt and Hensch as well. Incidentally, at every meeting, Richter asked,
"How is the gracious lady?"
which can be seen as an impressive reminiscence of past times. With "gracious lady," He did not refer to the wife of the author, or to his mother, by the way, but to his grandmother, Charlotte Reich Nehensch, whom he had known since the 1930s. Until his tragic death in a car accident, Professor Manfred Richter worked with the Federal Institute for Materials Research and Testing. As a side note, the knowledge of color measurement, and in particular of the anomaloscope, was important for the author's father's exemption from military service in the Second World War. He found out to which value he had to adjust the Schmidt and Hensch anomaloscope in order not to be called up by the military during the medical examination when his color perception was measured. A successful strategy. The measurement of color is not an entirely physical parameter. The human eye has color receptors, the so-called cones, which are sensitive to the three primary colors, red, green, and blue. The sensitivity varies individually and even according to the time of day, since the receptors tire out. Also, the popular argument between men and women about a color not being quite the right tone of red has its origins in this fact. Furthermore, the structure of a surface influences human color perception. Rough structures create a darker color impression than smooth ones. Another application of photometry is the color mixing and standardization of signal colors. Here again, the close collaboration with Professor Dr. Engineer Manfred Richter needs to be mentioned. As a leading advocate of the theory of color and long-term employee of the Federal Institute for Materials Research and Testing, he ordered color mixing devices from Schmidt and Hensch, which were initially used for the definition of railway lights. The Ulbricht sphere, which is widespread in technical optics, is named after the engineer Richard Ulbricht and was also developed as early as 1870. The optical properties of this sphere produce a diffuse distribution of a light source or a diffuse reflection of light from a surface. With the help of this setup, the intensity of light can be measured either diffuse or as a function of the position. Further applications are the photometric spheres for the determination of the distribution of a light source, which Schmidt and Hensch built until the 1950s. The limitation of the frame size to 5 meter failed only due to the ceiling height of the production location in Naumannstrasse. There are numerous further devices of technical optics which were built by Schmidt and Hensch, but which have ceased to play a role in today's production program. Film projection might be mentioned here lastly. Precision mechanics and excellent optics were required here as well. In summary, it can be said that first and foremost expertise in fine mechanics, as well as the production of premium quality plane optics, are characteristic for the company. Thanks to solid construction knowledge, qualified employees, and together with scientists, we were able to develop high-quality optical measurement systems and processes, the operating principles of which mostly continue to exist today. Due to today's possibilities of electronics and software, the company has various opportunities for further development. In addition, sales and distribution become more and more important. Besides the partially sophisticated applications, it is important to ensure an on-site service and a high availability of the appliances for customers. The qualification of the distribution partners and their service is equally important as making known the usage and advantages of the appliances and explain their growing functionality. This is a task which is continuously demanded in a small company with global distribution partners and which is not always easy to tackle.